This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education, by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We talked about U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, concerns about climate change. That and Yellen's broader concerns about our economy are the subject of a new book. It's entitled Empathy Economics, Janet Yellen's Remarkable Rise to Power and Her Drive to Spread Prosperity to All. The author, Owen Ullman, is executive editor of the International Economy magazine, and he joins Scarlett and me via Zoom in Bethesda, Maryland. Owen, so nice to have you here with us. How are you? And tell us about this book, because it is about Yellen's life, her career. It's also very informative when it comes to the U.S. financial system. What was your thinking and your mission when you set out to write this?
Right. Sometimes I wonder, what was I thinking writing this book? But, you know, being at home during the pandemic was a good time to research it. First of all, Carol and Scarlett, thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So as a longtime reporter, over 40 years covering economics, politics for USA Today, for Associated Press, Business Week, I've gotten to know Janet Yellen over 30 years when she first came to Washington as a junior governor of the Federal Reserve. And I've really come to admire her because she is a very unique person on many levels. First off, it's unusual to come to someone across in Washington who is so nice and so unassuming and humble. You know, you don't find that very often. She hasn't been, become arrogant because of her positions. The other thing, she is a real glass ceiling smasher. You know, think about it. The first woman to be chair of the Fed, the first woman to be Treasury Secretary after more than 230 years. And the first person of either gender to have those jobs, as well as being chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. So she certainly has a lot of history behind her. And so I thought she would be a fascinating person to write about, basically, how did this woman wind up in such a historic number of positions? What is her philosophy, and what has made her kind of such a nice person unaffected by her celebrity and power?
And so much of it goes back to her early childhood. She was raised in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. She was the daughter of a doctor, and she saw the way her father treated patients, and that had a huge impact on how she thought about the role that policymakers play on society overall.
Correct. So that is true. So she was the first wave of baby boomers. She was born in 1946. And as a child, where she lived in relative affluence compared to a lot of her neighbors. And her father was his family doctor who had his office in the basement of their two-story row house. And she saw these patients come in to be treated. And a lot of them were still suffering the economic scars from the Depression. They were out of work, they were ill, they didn't have much money, and they had desperation on their faces. And he was a wonderful, caring doctor. He never worried about whether they could afford to pay or not. He would take whatever money they could afford to give him. And the other thing she saw, besides just how disadvantaged they were economically, was how important a job is to your self-esteem, your self-worth, and your feeling of wanting to, you know, produce something important in your life. I think that was a really big lesson for her, which
designed to support all major asset classes.
Empathy about how do you make the economy create as many jobs and as much prosperity for everyone, not just, you know, the well-to-do and those of us who may own, you know, stocks and have had higher education, but how do you make it work for people who come into their life with far fewer advantages?
Hey, she
that's kind of been her North Star.
She seems like, you know, check, check, check. She just did one accomplishment after another, Owen. But I know early on in your book, I think you talk about some of her time at Harvard. I mean, she left Harvard, right? She, maybe at that point, nobody would have said, okay, this is a woman who's going to be head of the Fed, U.S. Treasury Secretary, right? It was a different mode. And we just got about a minute and then we'll come back and talk some more.
Sure. So basically, yes, in high school, girls were barred from going to the School for Gifted Boys, public school back then in the 60s. One of the rare people to study economics at in college and at Yale. And yes, at Harvard, she was denied tenure. She left. She wasn't feeling, you know, very confident about it. But her career then took off after that. She persevered despite all the barriers that women felt in the profession at the time.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Do you love Elon Musk? Do you hate Elon Musk? Do you have no idea what to think about Elon Musk? Then we have just the show for you.
He's become even more larger than life.
Buying Twitter doesn't get us closer to Mars.
They are like really close to the edge of like everything falling apart.
Like, oh, Elon, I volunteer, put a chip in my brain.
Each week on this podcast, we'll break down, analyze, and debate the most important stories on Musk and his empire.
It's all one big universe. You just work for Elon Inc.
From Bloomberg Business Week, this is Elon Inc. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week. Carol Masser along with Scarlett Fu. We do want to get back to our guest because still with us is Owen Ullman. He's executive editor of the International Economy magazine. We are talking about his new book, Empathy Economics, Janet Yellen's Remarkable Rise to Power and Her Drive to Spread Prosperity to All. Still with us via Zoom from Bethesda, Maryland. But as Owen, you reminded us, you were even part of the Bloomberg, the Business Week family at one point, but you've written about economics, business world for a long time, including covering Janet Yellen. So it's really fun to hear what you have to say about her trajectory, her path. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, what is it interesting and that really stands out about Janet Yellen as an economist? Because not every economist is the same or what they focus on. What is so unique and interesting about her approach to economics?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, she is kind of a mainstream economist. She has never embraced any, you know, wild theories on either, you know, the left or the right. But I think what makes her really unique is how she always seems to want to put people, the average person, front and center of, you know, what is good economic policy. You know, it's not, you know, what's good for Wall Street. It's not what's good for, you know, just corporations and imports or exports or the dollar. You know, while she's very mindful of that, she's always thinking, what are good policies that maximize employment, help those at the bottom of the economic ladder get jobs and have improved incomes and lives? What makes them more productive? You know, she's been giving speeches lately about what she calls modern supply side economics. You may have followed that. What's unique about it is the original supply side argument is we need to have more investment in plant and equipment, basically in capital, to expand supply, you know, so that the economy can grow. She wants to use investment in people, invest in education, invest in training, arguing that, you know, an educated and well-trained workforce is going to be happier, they're going to be more productive, they're going to earn more, and therefore they'll have more money to spend and to help expand the economy. And I think that is kind of a unique perspective.
Yeah.
I think another thing you mentioned earlier was climate change, if you want to talk about that at all.
No, but I think all of this feeds into that idea that she practices empathy economics, which again is the title of your book. Do you think Janet Yellen changed the Fed, the institution, or do you think the Fed changed her?
I think she had more of an impact on the Fed. Obviously, the Fed, being 109 years old, you know, has a long tradition on what its goals should be. But she did. She had a few amazing impacts on the Fed. One was back as a junior member of the Fed under Alan Greenspan, the legendary chair. There was an argument back in the 1990s about should the Fed set a target of zero inflation as its goal. She argued it's better to set 2% inflation as a goal, because to reach a zero, you would have to have such a strict, austere economy that it would be too painful for the workforce. She actually prevailed. She got all the other governors to agree. Even Greenspan agreed. And you may recall it was in 2012 that then Fed Chair Ben Bernanke actually announced 2% as the official target of the Fed for setting inflation. So that was pretty remarkable. The other thing she did at the Fed was she really stressed concerns about inequality, growing inequality in our society, and the risk that poses to social and political stability, which in today's environment is pretty prescient.
No, it's one, and, it's one of our big macro themes. And I think she was kind of, not kind of, she was way ahead of the curve. It's certainly something the pandemic revealed in a big way, and it continues. And we've got smarter in terms of not talking about income gaps, but wealth gaps, which is much more significant and really, you know, stresses the injustices that are out there in society and why people just, some people can't get ahead. One thing I wanted to ask you, though, as we talk about inequalities, because I feel like it had to be hard for her at times being in such a male-dominated field and world, whether it's economics, whether it's the Fed, whether it's government. And I wondered, you know, how she approached it, how she thought about it, because there must have been times that it was very difficult.
Yes, it was. And this is where I'll make a plug for her mother, who doesn't get enough credit. You know, her father.
We mothers never do. I'm just going to put it out there.
her father gave her the empathy gene, and she talks about him. But her mother was a really remarkable person, you know, considering back in the 40s, where women weren't accustomed to having careers and were homemakers. She was a very bright, demanding but loving mother who insisted that the children do their best, that they have professional careers, that they be organized, that they dress well. They even went on cruises around the world to widen their perspective. And I think that gave Janet traits she needed to put her head down and really say, I'm going to compete with the best of men in a field that they dominate. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to feel like an aggrieved victim. I'm just going to work real hard, focus, use my intelligence to get ahead. And she did. And she succeeded in almost every area that she pursued without feeling, you know, I'm a victim of sex discrimination. But she is very mindful of all the women who are. And she has made a point of talking about the gender inequality gap. You know, women still make far less than men. And I think the Wall Street Journal recently had an amazing study that showed even when you control for where people went to college and fields they entered, women still made 10 to 15% less than men.
Yep.
And that bothers her a lot. And she really wants to use whatever, you know, power she has to try to correct that.
We're still doing the same jobs. We're doing it backwards in heels. It's just the same way, and not making
as much
money.
Still getting paid less.
Yes, exactly. Owen, nice to get some time with you. Owen Allman, executive editor, International Economy Magazine. Check out his new book, Empathy Economics, Janet Yellen's Remarkable Rise to Power and Her Drive to Spread Prosperity to All. It's a major theme of our time.
I can't wait to read this book.
I know. I agree.
I'm looking forward to it. Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie's based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Heard, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.